Dozens are dead in Orlando after the worst mass shooting in the nation's history. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the tragedy in Orlando as investigators search for answers and loved ones wait to hear if their friends and relatives are alive. 549-2937 to join us. Then later, Jacksonville's Coming Out Monologue celebrates 5 years, but it will be a somber occasion in the wake of the tragedy in Central Florida and sports with Cole Pepper. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, investigators are working at this hour to piece together what led to a shooting rampage Sunday at an Orlando nightclub, the worst mass shooting in American history. 29-year-old Omar Mateen of Fort Pierce, Florida, was killed by police at the Pulse nightclub after opening fire on the clubgoers inside, killing 49 people before police killed him. This morning, the relatives and friends of those that are still unaccounted for are beginning to lose hope that their loved ones had somehow survived this mass shooting. We go live now to reporter Brendan Byrne of member station WMFE in Orlando for the latest. Brendan, good morning. And what are investigators telling reporters in Orlando this morning?
We just had a press conference at 7:30 this morning. The death count, there's been 49 victims and the shooter, so that's 50. Their number one priority for local investigators here is identifying those victims. They've identified all but one as of 7:30, and they've notified approximately half of them, half of the next of kin. And as they do that, they're beginning to release the names of those victims.
At the same time, there are loved ones, I understand it, waiting, hoping against hope that they have someone who was in the club early Sunday morning that somehow survived the tragedy. Have you had a chance to talk to any family members or friends of those who still are not accounted for?
I personally have not, but we do have reporters out in the field that have. It is very tragic, and as you can imagine, that's going to be a terrible feeling to have. Now going into a day after, and not being able to hear from those folks. They have set up a place for families to kind of find out some information from the hospital. There is a line that the state attorney general has given out to family members that might be looking for loved ones. But as you can imagine, it could be a very tragic waiting time.
Police, meanwhile, are saying that the killer, Omar Mateen, called 911 in the midst of the shooting rampage and declared allegiance to ISIS. Mateen's father has also said that his son had been angered by seeing two men kissing in recent months down in Miami. Tell us a little bit about the importance of the Pulse nightclub to Orlando's LGBT community and how this has shaken the community there.
Yeah, Pulse is a gay nightclub. It's just south of our central business district here. And for anyone familiar with the area, it's pretty much a staple of the LGBT community. We have a gay a commissioner at the city. She frequents the establishment. There's lots of people in the LGBT community that frequent Pulse nightclub. And it's a very tight-knit community here in Orlando. They've all come together. They're looking forward. A lot of the community organizations here and community centers, specifically geared at the LGBT community, have opened their doors to help folks out. And they're actually looking forward. They're looking at what they can do to prevent stuff like this from happening again. They're talking about marching to the Capitol in Tallahassee and. In the wake of this tragedy, they're seeing what they can do to make a difference.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on such a sad day. Reporter Brendan Byrne of our member station WMFE in Orlando. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And the number to join your join us with your thoughts about all of this is 549-2937. And as the world mourns the tragedy in Orlando, we are as well here in Jacksonville. Joining us now in studio to provide some thoughts, we welcome Jimmy Midyet, attorney and member of the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality. Good morning.
Good morning.
Professor Parvez Ahmed of the city's Human Rights Commission and University of North Florida.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Eric Friday, Jacksonville attorney and Second Amendment advocate. Good morning.
Good morning.
And again, as I mentioned, we want your calls and thoughts about the mass shooting in Orlando. The number to join us, 549-2937. Jimmy, let's begin with you. Hundreds turned out last night for a candlelight vigil in Memorial Park to mourn this horrible tragedy and speak out.
That's right. It was really a moving experience to be out there with hundreds and hundreds of people. You have to remember that it's only been about 30 hours since the events that took place in Orlando, and to have that come together so quickly with just such a great cross-section of Jacksonville standing in solidarity with the victims in Orlando was incredible.
And in fact, Cindy Watson of the LGBT youth advocacy group, Jasmine, spoke out quite passionately about Jacksonville's human rights ordinance in the wake of this tragedy. Let's listen.
To send the most powerful message possible to anyone who would dare to attack us, that this city will not stand for hate and violence and discrimination.
Does the tragedy in Orlando lend renewed urgency to your organization's efforts, the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality, to once again try to pass an updated human rights ordinance in this city?
That was absolutely the sense of the crowd. I mean, obviously, Cindy Watson gave a very rousing speech as part of her remarks. And it was really something else to have a representative from Mayor Lenny Curry's office there, to have a, you know, the Sheriff Williams sent someone. We had two city council members who spoke to the group. And all of their messages were centered around the need to come together. And obviously, we don't want to politicize a tragedy like this, but there is this need for the human rights ordinance update in Jacksonville, and I think we'll certainly return to that this fall.
Parvez Ahmed, you also spoke at the event at Memorial Park last night. We are still learning about the gunman, 29-year-old Omar Mateen. His family has said that he had hatred or an upset over seeing two gay men kissing, and that might have played a role in his horrible acts. We're also hearing that Mateen called 911 in the midst of the rampage and declared allegiance to ISIS. Reporters have pointed out that ISIS has employed a strategy of encouraging people to do that don't have any official tie to the organization. But as there are renewed calls again, particularly from Donald Trump and others, to ban Muslims from this country, your thoughts? This young man was a U.S. citizen, born in New York, and he had a legal firearm license.
Well, my first thoughts are this is a tragedy of unspeakable proportion. This is a tragedy that has that we come with a heavy heart and with shocked conscience. And we all have to stay united to fight these kind of tragedies and to fight the impulse to blame large groups of people. It is quite ironic to observe that the same people who have been for decades demonizing the LGBTQ community are now coming out to demonize another community. So it is, and yet at the same time, we cannot dismiss the threat that ISIS poses by radicalizing individuals like this. To what extent this person was radicalized, we don't know that yet. Even if he said he pledges his allegiance to ISIS in the midst of a shooting, what does that imply? Again, we don't know. But it is certain what we do know about this individual, that he was animated by hate towards the LGBTQ community. He was a very hateful person, a very toxic, prone to anger, with very easy access to guns. And that toxic mix, this tragedy, in my view, is the confluence of easy accessibility to guns, the easy radicalization of people over the internet, the hatred towards vulnerable minorities, particularly the LGBTQ community in this instance, and the general permissiveness that has been allowed in our society to continue legally discriminating against this subgroup of Americans. Today, the LGBTQ community remains the only community in America against whom discrimination is legalized, including in our city. So to what extent those play into these kinds of rages and violence should be examined, and that also should be examined within faith communities, including within my own faith community, to what extent rhetoric against LGBTQ communities and people have contributed to this tragedy. This is not a moment to blame each other. This is a moment to soul search with each other.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Eric Friday, you're a Second Amendment advocate and a local attorney. And as Parvez Ahmed pointed out, there's a triangular set of issues here. The LGBT movement for equality, the threat of young men radicalized by Islam, an extremist twisted version of Islam, and the easy access to guns. Your thoughts as the nation once again looks at the fact that the U.S. by far leads the world in these horrific mass shooting incidents?
Well, my first thought is the only group that has been easily attacked after this tragedy has been gun owners. That's the one group that everybody's had no problem, or that many people have had no problem attacking and blaming all gun owners for supporting gun rights, saying that there's easy access to guns. But I would point out that this gentleman was the type of person that even those who seek to ban private ownership of guns agree would have guns, for example, because they usually exclude military, police, and licensed security guards, which this gentleman was a licensed security guard. Not only was he a licensed security guard, he was working for the company that has the Homeland Security contract to transport illegal immigrants from detention facility to detention facility.
Let's go to your calls right now. There's so much to discuss after the mass shooting in Orlando Sunday. The number to join us as we speak with UNF's Parvez Ahmed, Florida Carey's Eric Friday, and Jimmy Medieta of the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality is 549-2937. Emery is in Riverside and has been holding. Emery, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I had all these things I wanted to say. The first thing that I have to say to the gentleman who just spoke is no one is attacking lawful gun owners. No one is going after anyone's private guns. And this myth has got to stop. This gentleman was motivated by hate, not Islam, not ISIS. He used the affiliation with ISIS to elevate himself in the minds of other people and to put some sort of meaning behind his hate. This was not an ISIS-sanctioned, I'm sure it was sanctioned after the fact, but ISIS-planned or sanctioned event. Secondly, LGBT people across the world are hurting right now. Many of us, like Jimmy, who I know personally, and a lot of us of an age in our 40s, in our 50s, gay clubs were the only place you felt safe, the only place you could go to hold your friend's hand, to be yourself with friends, and for somebody to come in and destroy the community in the way this person has shaken us to our core and mobilized us as a people in no way that has ever been seen before. And I really firmly believe that this is my generation's Stonewall and will call us to action to do things like bring sensible gun control. I'm not talking about taking people's weapons, but sensible gun control to this country. Thank you very much.
Okay, Emery. Eric, and then Jimmy.
Well, first of all, there is no doubt this is a tragedy for the gay community. That's clear. This is also a tragedy for America. This was an attack on America. This was an attack of terrorism. This was an attack just like 9/11. This person just targeted a particular group with their hatred. But it's no different than 9/11. It's the biggest terrorist attack on our soil since then. Unfortunately, the truth is President Obama is already calling for new gun controls.
What about the caller's argument and the president's argument that other nations have managed to curtail mass shootings by placing stricter limits on these types of assault-style weapons that can kill a lot of people in a very short amount of time?
Well, I would point out that America has had two basically terrorism mass shootings in the past year approximately. That would be the recruiting center attack and the attack Sunday morning. The city of Paris, during that same time period, has had two attacks. So one city where guns are strictly controlled has had just as many mass terrorism shootings as a country of 300 million. So it's not about guns. It's about how we investigate and how we find those people who are prone to this type of violence.
But Eric, we have more guns than any other country in the world. 270 million to some 300 million firearms in circulation. That's one firearm for every American. And when you look at the statistics in the aggregate, by far we lead the world since the 60s, 1970s, when they started tracking this, in these mass shooting incidents. But there's no comparison. The U.S. is such an outlier in this.
The interesting time frame that you just cited, the 1960s going forward, is where we've had the increase in mass shootings. It's also the time that we've had more and more and more controls on where guns can be carried. For example, the shooting Sunday night was in a gun-free zone, one of those places that under Florida law, nobody was allowed to possess firearms. However, based on the estimate of 300 people in the club, based on the average number of concealed carry licensees in the state, it is estimated that there would have been approximately 9 people who were lawfully licensed to carry a firearm who might have been in that club.
All right, you're shaking your head. Jimmy Midyat.
In my experience and in the experience of law enforcement and experts on these issues around the world, and especially in this country, more guns means more bullets. More bullets means more death. As much as I have to, you know, disagree with my colleague here, I think it's absolutely asinine to say that having more guns in a dark, enclosed space would have resulted in less death and less carnage. It mystifies me that you could say that.
Well, we have a few examples. Pearl, Mississippi high school shooting, Clackamas Mall shooting, and I forget the city in Africa where there happened to be an armed respondent in the mall. Those events all resulted in a quicker termination of the event before police arrived because an armed citizen of some type responded.
All right. The lines are jammed. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. But Parvez Ahmed, as I said, there are three issues here that the nation and the world is discussing in the wake of Orlando's tragedy: guns, LGBT equality, and the radicalization, as you said, of young men over the internet, often in terms of following what you've termed on this program many times, a twisted version of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Three issues, and they've intersected.
They have intersected, and we have to be honest about all of them. As I mentioned, there has to be an introspection among faith leaders, particularly faith leaders, and including in my faith community, about attitude towards the LGBTQ community. There are still many faith houses of worship in this city that have not come out in favor of the HRO, including the Islamic Center that I worship at. And I urge them to take this tragedy as a lesson to come out in favor of equal rights for all Americans. The same issue in terms of radicalization over the internet. It is very difficult for anybody to police this thing. How do you police somebody who is self-radicalizing themselves in their basement? They're often disconnected from their communities. They're often their families are the last to know about them, that they're indulged in this process. Although we do not know in this case to what extent this guy was radicalized. This guy was certainly a hateful, vengeful, angry person. Now you take that person who is vengeful, who is hatred towards LGBTQ people, hatred towards women, hatred towards people of other faiths, and you give that person, and with anger management issues, as his wife has testified now, and you give that person easy access to gun. The question, he's working for a security company. How was he not vetted? He was interviewed by the FBI twice. How is there no sensible policy that a person who is on the radar of the law enforcement for possible radicalization still has easy access to guns? And we still cannot come up with a sensible policy to restrict people who are prone to violence, prone to hatred, prone to anger, and prone to radicalization. This person was known to be radicalizing to the FBI, and yet he had no problem walking in, buying not just a handgun for personal safety, but buying an assault rifle that is intended just to kill people.
Let me ask you as well, as we continue to discuss the gun issue, what's your response to those listening who might now say, yes, we know this man was a U.S. citizen, but our nation is under threat by what critics of President Obama are saying he's refused to identify in his news conference yesterday. What would you say to those who are fearful that this nation is under threat, whether by U.S. citizens or people from outside our borders, by those who follow the ideology of ISIS, and that as a nation that we are not responding adequately to this threat?
There have been, on average, one mass shooting a year, one mass shooting a day, over whichever number of days you want to count that. Since Sandy Hook, there have been close to 1,000 mass shootings, about 1,000 casualties. So, by, for example, take the idea of banning Muslims. Well, flush that idea out for me. What do you mean by banning Muslims? How do you do this thing to begin with? This person was an American citizen. Just not too long ago, we had a person walk into an African-American church in Charleston, motivated by radical white supremacist ideology, and blow people up, shoot people up. So the idea that you can just ban one group of people and magically all our problems of mass shooting will go away and we as a country will become completely safe and immune from terrorism, it's just a ludicrous idea. Right. It's just an idea that is not based on facts.
Right.
Yet at the same time, there are ways in which we can address this problem, not by blaming each other, but by working with each other. The communities from which these people come from do have a responsibility. And to the extent, in some sense, the communities do live up to the responsibility. As you know, in our local community over here, when we heard about a person preaching radical ideas inside our mosque, we notified the FBI. The FBI finally nabbed that person. And there are many such efforts. In fact, by objective estimates, well over one-third of the suspects, terrorism suspects who have been caught in the last few years have been caught because of complaints that came from their own community. And can more be done? Sure. But more cannot be done if the community feels vulnerable, if the community feels threatened, if the community feels isolated and marginalized. You will actually make the problem worse.
Let's go to lots of your calls now. Melissa is in Clay County. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi, my name is Melissa Lockhart, and thank you, Melissa, for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'll say right up front, I know Dr. Ahmed.
Hey, Melissa.
We've worked together, and I have great respect for him. I'd like to make 2 points and then also ask a question. My first point is that there is evil in the world, and we're never going to extinguish it. So we're never going to be able to have a free society and also prevent all of these things from happening. I do think we should be able to curtail them by reaching out to people who seem lonely and isolated. They are of every walk of life and of every stripe, every religion, every nationality, and they're among us. There are lonely people who feel isolated and abused everywhere. And I think as individuals, as communities, if we reach out to them and accept them into our lives, we stand a much better chance of curtailing this kind of activity. I feel very sorry for everyone who is affected personally by this great tragedy.
All right. The second thing I'd like to ask is,
is there a symbol, a ribbon, anything I can wear? I work in Jacksonville and have all my life. And I really think it's a great shame we have not adopted an inclusive HRA that includes LGBTQ people. And I would wear that symbol every day until that thing is adopted.
Okay.
And thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. Last night I was watching the Tony Awards and people were wearing ribbons in solidarity with this tragedy. And in fact, the host, James Corden, dedicated the show to the Orlando victims. There is a ribbon people can wear, isn't there?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people wearing a ribbon that is sort of rainbow and black, sort of intermixed together. But, I mean, what was said by Melissa, I mean, there's so many things to unpack there, and I want to try to do that for a second, because it also goes back to something that Parvez said. I mean, at our rally yesterday, there were many, many faith leaders who were diverse. I mean, it was a diverse group of people. We had, a rabbi. We had Christian ministers. We had Dr. Ahmed was kind enough to speak. I saw Dr. Rathor in the crowd. It was a really fantastic group of people. And really, whenever something like this happens, we have to watch the reaction from the political class and from so many places, because it's true. The very same people who are trying to rally the LGBT community to become angry at Muslims, at people who follow Islam, are the same people who want to keep trans kids from using the bathroom that corresponds to their gender identity. They're the same people who fought for decades against marriage equality. They're the same people who continue to fight against the human rights ordinance for us here in Jacksonville. So I think that what I hold it as a value and as an important community value for myself and for others is that I remember that Parvez is my friend, and that he and I may worship differently, but that doesn't mean that we have to be adverse to each other. I've met his lovely wife and very tall son. You know, his family is different than my family, but that doesn't mean that we have to be adverse to each other. And there are political forces in this country right now that are attempting to use this awful situation for their own purposes, to further a type of hate that is unfortunate.
All right, let's go to Steve on the South Side. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. This is Steve. You and I have talked about this issue in the past. It wasn't very long ago that a news reporter was killed, basically on air. You may remember that show.
Yeah, I remember.
And at the time, I pointed out the irony that the front page of the Times Union headline talked about the murder, and at the bottom there was a crawler about gun show. Come on in, buy as many guns as you want. $39, you can get your carry permit. And I'm going to direct this to your Second Amendment guy there. I am offended. The first words out of his mouth are that the gun owners of America are the victims. And the fact, the undisputed fact I'd like to point out, is that one guy was able to enter this establishment and inflict something over 100 casualties. Single-handedly. Now, I used to help with the ACLU. I believe in the Constitution, and I believe in the amendments. But just like the First Amendment, the Second Amendment is not unqualified. And I would like your Second Amendment guy to defend why an assault weapon whose sole purpose is to inflict maximum damage in a minimal amount of time. You don't go squirrel hunting with it. Why should this exist? And please don't parrot back this Wayne LaPierre nonsense. You don't go squirrel hunting with an assault rifle. Please don't lose track that you can restrict some of these things, like a grenade or Xylon gas, and still have a Second Amendment. So I'd like to have your Second Amendment guy to defend for me why this weapon even exists.
All right. Eric Friday.
Well, first of all, I didn't claim that gun owners were victims here. What I said was we were the only group that it was okay and acceptable to blame, that it was politically correct to blame. We were the only group of people who was criticized by the president. As to the justification for why we have such guns, the Supreme Court just recently in the past few years has ruled twice and told us what the purpose behind the Second Amendment is. It has two purposes. Has the purpose of, number one, self-defense, and number two, the purpose of protection of American freedom. It has those purposes. As for the idea that a AR-15 is not a useful firearm for any purpose other than killing people, which is, it's nothing but hyperbole from our opponents. The fact is they are very useful. Many ranchers use them as varmint guns. Many people use them for target shooting purposes. That platform is useful for a lot of purposes. And quite frankly, the claim, a lot of people keep saying, well, this is one of those powerful assault rifles. This is one of the smallest caliber rifles out there. I mean, this is not a powerful all-purpose weapon. I mean, most deer rifles are much more powerful than an AR-15.
This type of assault weapon was banned in this country for 10 years. The ban lapsed. This morning, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is calling for the reinstitution of this assault weapons ban, what would you say to those listening, like the caller, who said that that it is possible to protect the Second Amendment while at the same time restricting the easy availability of what I think is fair to call a weapon of war? It's a military-grade weapon.
Well, number one, I would have to take issue with calling it a military-grade weapon. Military-grade weapons are what are called selective fire weapons. They generally have a single-shot option as well as a multi-shot option. AR-15s are a semi-automatic, one shot per one pull of the trigger. It is not a military-grade weapon. It is not the same weapon used by our troops.
But it's capable of killing so many people in such an incredibly short amount of time. It's not like a handgun.
Well, I would dispute that. I mean, most handguns carried by people for self-defense every day in this state, by 1.5 million concealed carry holders in this state, have bigger rounds than a 9mm compared to a 0.556mm. And we're talking about a big difference in size. You're talking about banning the smaller bullets, is what you're talking about. As to the question of that we had the ban, the Congressional Research Service, all of the studies that have been done regarding the 1994 to 2004 assault weapons ban, which was largely based on the cosmetics of the firearm, not the functionality of the firearm, all have come to the same conclusion, both liberal and conservative, that it did not actually make any measurable change in gun deaths.
All right. Go ahead quickly, and then we'll go back to some calls.
Sure, Melissa. Thank you. I would just say that, you know, we're not talking about the caliber of the bullet here. We're talking about the action of the machine. And whether it's a high caliber clip, whether it's an AR-15, these are instruments of mass death. And it is these should be banned. I mean, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, and you also can't take an assault rifle into a crowded club and kill people with it. This weapon is the weapon of choice for mass shooters in this country, from Sandy Hook to Aurora, California, to Orlando, Florida, and you should be ashamed, sir, for saying what you've said today.
I just want to make a quick comment over here. I hear this that anytime people call for sensible gun regulation, that this is an attack on gun owners. Nobody's attacking gun owners. I don't think so. The president attacked gun owners yesterday. I don't think so. Any of us, either Jimmy or myself, attacked gun owners or blamed all gun owners. All we are talking about that in the wake of a tragedy, an unspeakable tragedy like this, why can't we come together and think about sensible ways in which guns can be restricted from the hands of those who intend to do harm, people who are mentally ill, people who are on terrorist watch lists. A person who is on a no-fly list today cannot fly an airplane, but can walk in and purchase a gun. That's how ridiculous our laws are right now in terms of gun control. Why can't we come together on those issues?
Well, I would point out to both of you, you may not be aware, but I was personally involved recently in one of the more recent legislative sessions with helping to pass laws to better modify our mental health laws to restrict people who were involuntarily examined and then voluntarily committed themselves, to restrict them from owning guns because of their mental health status. The issue that my organization has is not with that people who have mental health issues shouldn't be able to buy guns, or that people who are on watch lists should be able to buy guns. Our issue is you have a fundamental right to firearms ownership in this country, and we do not deprive citizens of fundamental rights without due process of law and without an opportunity for hearing and without an opportunity to challenge the deprivation of a civil right. Neither one of you would ever support the deprivation of any one of your civil rights on any other issue. And in fact, you know, Jimmy, you and several friends of mine are very active in fighting very hard for a human rights ordinance here in Jacksonville because you want the vindication of your civil rights. I believe in all 10 of the amendments. I believe in all of the amendments in Article 1 of the Florida Constitution that protect our civil rights. Florida Carry, at the end of the day, is a civil rights organization. We just happen to focus on a particular civil right, and we will defend that civil right just as strongly as any other person defends their civil rights.
Okay, one more call. Larry in Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for taking my call. First of all, I'm a gay man. I am a gun owner. I have no particular religious faith. This is a hate crime that is about gun laws, and I'd like to address what your Second Amendment person was just saying as well. No one is attacking gun owners. This is about gun laws, which desperately need to be addressed in this country. And please stop referring to yourself as an advocate of the Second Amendment. You are not fighting for the Second Amendment. You are fighting for a cause, a very specific cause. The Second Amendment protects all citizens, not just gun owners. Melissa, thank you so much for taking my call and addressing this issue. It's very, very personal to me.
All right. And let's close with Jimmy Midyat. In particular, I'd like to ask you, LGBT Americans and those around the world have been shaken and saddened by this and have said quite profoundly in the last 12, 24 hours that they feel incredibly vulnerable in the wake of this tragedy. How will the local community respond in the coming days and weeks?
Well, my hope is that we will continue to reach out to each other, that we will, you know, hug each other when we need to and you know, wipe the tears away, that we will build and continue to build a stronger community in Jacksonville for LGBT people and continue to show solidarity with those who in Orlando. You know, a lot of people from Jacksonville go to Orlando and go and enjoy the attractions and the clubs. And I know many people who, you know, have been to Pulse. And so it's very real. It's very real to us. And so that's what we hope for. And then we hope to turn this really vulnerable feeling into action, positive action.
Gentlemen, thank you so much, all three of you, for giving us your thoughts this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined by Jimmy Midyat of the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality, Eric Friday, who represents the Second Amendment Advocacy Group Florida Carry, and Parvez Ahmed of UNF and Jacksonville's Human Rights Commission. Well, later in the hour, sports with Culpepper, but up next, a somber anniversary as Jacksonville's Coming Out Monologue celebrates 5 years. We'll talk to them in a moment.
America's middle class has always been a moving target. Flint, Michigan was once a boom town.
All is excitement, even the small fry are buzzing.
Today, vacant houses are being torn down.
Our old school is closed and abandoned.
The New Middle, exploring what it means to be middle class in America today, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Corporate America has always been tough, but never like this.
And basically it was, look to the left, look to the right, some of you won't be here. I think that's when my heart went through the floor, and I'm sure a lot of others too.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Our series, The Price of Profits, starts off with a corporate legend, IBM, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this year's production of Coming Out Monologues Jacksonville is getting ready to celebrate the group's fifth anniversary season. The show runs June 17th and 18th, but it will be somewhat of a somber anniversary in some respects in light of the mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando over the weekend. Right now, we welcome Kyle Sieg, a member of this year's cast and production team. Good morning.
Good morning.
And cast member Brandi Williamson. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So it's sad to welcome you this morning on what would ordinarily be a really joyous occasion. I would think some heavy hearts will be in the audience at your performance.
Absolutely. In the audience and backstage as well. We had our final rehearsal before dress rehearsal yesterday, and it's not the best thing ever to have to open up your rehearsal, not by rehearsing, but by holding a moment of silence, for people. There were people actually, who are part of our cast who didn't even know for sure if some of their friends were alive or not. They hadn't found out yet.
They had friends that might have been there.
Right.
Really?
Many of us had friends, who live in Orlando or, as Jimmy said, travel to Orlando.
You used to live there.
I lived there for a period of time. I've been to that club. It hits particularly close to home, and it definitely set a different tone for the rehearsals. But I think it made us even more resolute in our, desire to tell these stories in hopes of educating people about, our lives.
Brandy, that's what this is all about. It's about people telling their stories and being honest about who they are.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I am one of those people who are waiting for someone to reach out.
Someone that you think might have been there that night.
Yeah, out of respect for the family, I won't say the name, but yeah, we are posting like, please just say something, someone reach out. So it was just devastating to have to check in with the cast. How are you? How's everybody coping with this and how do we process this? So even I, being vulnerable right now, I was like, do I really want to do this? It makes you question.
Really?
Do you want to follow through with coming out monologues? But I just said that, we have to. We still have to be the voice.
You're one of the cast members. You're going to give us a short preview now of your full performance. Can you share a little excerpt for us?
Sure. So I was riding in the car with a friend when she makes a comment about how pretty my lip gloss was and that my lips look very sexy. Immediate side eye. I say thank you with hesitation, but it doesn't stop there. While we were waiting in the drive-thru, she asked me to kiss her. Say what? My hands immediately begin sweating. I'm sweating up under my arms. I can't catch my breath, but I'm laughing uncontrollably. Then she continues to ask me, but I keep scooting away. I keep saying no, but then she says, well, just kiss me once, and if you don't like it, we never have to do it again. I keep saying no, but a part of me is saying yes, yes, yes. We didn't kiss that day. We talked on the phone. I couldn't wait to tell my cousins what had happened. I told them how my friend wanted to kiss me and that I was actually attracted to her. On January 19th, we began dating. I introduced my girlfriend to my mom as my friend. I knew I could never tell my mother that I was dating a woman, but this just feels right. She understands me. Our cycles have synced. I feel so special. I wanted to be in her arms. I felt at peace, finally. Our relationship was easy, except for the fact that no one could know. She was in the closet, and now so was I. One night, my cousins were at my house talking to my mom, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, a normal Saturday. I got called away, but when I returned home, my cousins were gone and my mom was fuming. We argued for what seemed like hours, and then I realized that in the 30 minutes that I was gone, I was outed by my own family, my blood.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
That's one example, Kyle, of the performances people can take in. This is coming up. The Coming Out Monologues premieres June 17th.
Yes, this week here at WJCT Studios. And you're right. So many of our stories are about, the traditional coming out, as you might expect it. Others are about advocating for our community. Others are about education, about things like the trans community, things like LGBT Christians, there are many different stories that we tell, and they are so important. I mean, Brandy's excerpt there highlights, the fear that so many in our community live in with just their families, and when you think of things like this weekend, as was mentioned before, these places are places of safety and security. You don't have to worry necessarily about holding your significant other's hand, you don't have to worry about that. And we hope that this production really helps people, it's a safe space for people to understand our community and to learn more about how similar we are, because we are all so very similar.
It's the fifth annual Coming Out Monologues this weekend here at WJCT with performances on the 17th and 18th, three shows total. You can get your tickets now at com2016.eventbrite.com. Kyle Sieg, Brandy Williamson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Cole Pepper's up next.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
On the next Fresh Air, Claire Hoffman tells us about growing up in a community devoted to transcendental meditation, where parents would meditate for hours.
Parents are sort of going off with these blissful smiles to go meditate, and we would, you know, be trying to break open vending machines and shoplifting and God knows what else.
Hoffman's new memoir is Greetings from Utopian Park. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour on Wednesday, it might be the biggest game ever in the history of the Jacksonville Armada.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now with a look at all the weekend sports, including the Armada in the U.S. Open Cup versus Orlando City. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, this is the oldest soccer tournament in America, over 100 years old. It was first played in 1914. And I think we've talked about this in the past. It's inclusive of every soccer team in the country at all levels. So this is a huge tournament. And the Armada last week beat Charleston in the third round to get to the fourth round. And they'll play Orlando City with something on the line, a chance to advance in this very prestigious tournament. They're playing at JU on Wednesday, by the way, because the baseball ground's not available due to the sun schedule. So 7 o'clock at JU on Wednesday against Orlando City, and if the Armada would win, they would play on June the 29th, probably against another MLS team, although there are other teams from other leagues that have made it through, including other NASL teams like the Armada. Still some tickets available as well for Wednesday's match, but you'll recall that the Armada played Orlando City in the preseason, won 2-1 in that week, and so this is something that Tony Miola, the head coach, really cares deeply about, that the owner Mark Frisch really cares deeply about. So the Armada are going to go out full bore here to try to continue on in the U.S. Open Cup.
That's exciting. And you've got some more soccer news to talk about as well.
Yeah, the U.S. men's national team will face Ecuador in Seattle on Thursday in the quarterfinals of the Copa America. The U.S. won their group despite playing a man down for much of the second half on Saturday against Paraguay. There was a chance the U.S. would have faced Brazil in the quarterfinals, which would have been, I think, even a bigger story just because of the history of Brazilian soccer. But when Costa Rica upset Colombia, it set up the U.S. versus Ecuador match. By the way, Brazil, since then, eliminated from the tournament on a controversial handball call that was not made that allowed Peru to advance. So Brazil is out and the United States is in Copa America. Who would have thought that we've gotten to that point? If the U.S. were to win on Thursday, they could potentially wind up facing Argentina, with the world's best player, Lionel Messi, in the semifinals.
And, you know, our listeners are learning so much about the soccer world through your weekly segments now that we have our own team. And I know we've talked about this before, but all over the world, people know these names.
Yes.
A lot of sports fans in this country are just starting to learn them.
Yeah, and I think with Copa America in particular, to be able to showcase a player like Messi here in the United States, he came on at halftime, or in the second half, rather, of Argentina's last match after he didn't play in the first one, scored 3 goals in the span of about 20 minutes. And so his brilliance was really on display. Has to be one of the top 5 or 6 players in the history of the game.
All right, let's talk about the Jaguars. People will have the chance to go see some free practice sessions. It's the final off-season minicamp of the summer this week.
Yeah, tomorrow and Wednesday, the practices are free and open to the public, although you must register in advance on the team's website. There's an interesting note here on the Jaguars, by the way. If you pay any attention to the bookmakers in Las Vegas, for entertainment purposes only.
Of course.
If you look at the odds for the Jaguars season, the over-under on wins is 7.5. So, in other words, they think that people will think the Jaguars will win 7 or 8 games in general. All right, that would be a huge step forward, and I think folks would generally be pleased if they were to do that. That would be the most wins in Gus Bradley's tenure as the head coach. But they're currently only favored to win 1 game if you take them one at a time. And that is the last game of the season at home against the Tennessee Titans. They are a pick 'em for several other games, 4 other games. But it's interesting now how if you look at these game by game, there's one expectation. And if you look at the season taken in total, there's another expectation. But remember, this is also influenced by the fact that the smart money may go one way, but public money typically tends to follow the big teams with the deep followings like the Steelers and the Cowboys and the Redskins, those kind of teams.
And almost out of time, but the Suns losing over the weekend, but the Sharks beating Tampa Bay.
Setting up a big matchup on Saturday at the arena against Melissa,
the hated Orlando Predators. Although after the tragedy over the weekend, we got to send Orlando a little love, but we still want the Sharks to beat Orlando.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but thanks as always for a great discussion. Follow Cole on Twitter at @ColePepper for all your sports news and notes. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. This show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Sean Birch is our producer. Our daily podcasts are up at iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, the mass shooting at a nightclub in Orlando Sunday is the deadliest in American history. The latest on the massacre and where the investigation goes from here. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.